for time.
We are.
Morning, members and members of the public. Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee meeting of March 9th, 2026. We do have a quorum. I call this meeting to order. And we will start with the approval of the minutes. Representative Agbaje, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and there are some moved.
Thank you. All those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you very much. Members, today's hearing is really focused totally on systems modernization. As many of you know, we have a fraud problem. Can you imagine that? I mean, we've been talking, all been talking about it a lot. And I personally believe that if we cannot supply the tools to the agencies and the counties that actually deal with these funds and with properly expending these funds and properly vetting the people that take advantage of these funds, there's no way we can actually long-term address the fraud issues. The history of systems modernization in this state is bumpy at best. It's not that we haven't spent money. We've actually spent significant amounts of money, over $300 million just from 23 forward. And the results are mixed at best. I personally have history with this, dating back to the Minlars fiasco, if you remember that. Few of you were around back in those days. And we did reach a successful conclusion to that by going outside of the state of Minnesota for the software that actually operates the system, and that was done with the cooperation of the current governor. It was really the first thing, one of the first things he did when he was elected. So it's not that it can't be done, and it's not that it shouldn't be done, but we just seem to have a hard time doing it. I'm going to structure today's committee meeting a little differently. We're having presentations from the counties, from DHS, from DCYF, and some comments from Minute. And I'm going to hold questions from members until we've gone through all of those presentations. We have a lot of ground to cover, and I want to make sure we get all the presentations done in their complete forms today so that we don't miss anything. And once we get to questions, it's my intention to alternate between the two parties as we go through questions. I don't want either side to dominate. And please, when we do get to questions, make sure that you're asking questions. We really don't have time for floor speeches here today. I want to really dig into this information. I believe it's a bipartisan issue. I've seen a lot of head nodding from all perspectives, so let's hopefully try to stick to that attitude as we go forward. Minutes have been approved. Got a note to approve the minutes, but they're all done, so we're good. And with that, I think we'll go to our first presenters from the counties. If they would please make their way to the speaker's table. This will take about a half an hour, and I will let them introduce themselves rather than taking time to introduce them twice. Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee, all of you, and please introduce yourselves for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nathan Jessen. I'm the Executive Director at the Minnesota Intercounty Association. And just wanted to say that we really appreciate the time and the opportunity to present to the committee today, Chair Torkelson and the whole committee, for the time that you're taking to take a look at this issue and talk technology modernization for counties. At the very top, I wanted to just emphasize that all four of our county statewide organizations are going to be speaking to this issue today, and it's the number one priority for each of us, the Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Rural Counties, MICA, and the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, and that just kind of demonstrates that this is a true statewide issue, whether your county is over a million people or under 10,000, and that we also really appreciate the conversations that legislators have been having with their individual counties. As you see a couple pictures up here. So with that, over.
Good morning, committee. My name is Berta Torkelson. I'm here on behalf of Minnesota Rural Counties. We represent 45 member counties outside of the metro area. Just a quick glimpse at our agenda today for the county presentation. I'll pass it over to my colleague here, Matt Hilgart, who will give a good introduction of what you're going to be seeing today and some lenses that we want you to view this presentation through. Next, we'll invite a couple different county workers up to the stand to join us. One, to give you some demonstrations of this IT systems that we're talking about, give you a glimpse in the day of the life of an eligibility worker in your county, an SSIS update, the modernization activities that have been going on successfully this past year, and finally, back to the three of us to zoom out again, add some additional context and information from our unique perspectives, and add to the unified message of the urgency of this issue.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. My name is Matt Hilgart, and I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'm very pleased to be with you all here today. I am responsible for the disclaimer, which is beware of what you're about to see. We are going to be showing two systems today. Maxis, for those who haven't seen it, is a DOS-based screen. We'll be showing that just in moments away. And then we'll be talking about METS as well. I couldn't agree with the chair's introduction more, which is this is an issue that seems to have great resounding bipartisan support, and we welcome all the champions on this issue we can. Before we go through these presentations, and I apologize for some of the tax committee members who may have seen parts of this presentation just last week, Thursday, I just posit that as you watch these presentations, be thinking about this through the lens of four different areas. Or all of them included, which the first one is from a staff and workforce perspective. So be thinking about a county eligibility worker who's entering their day and spending 20 to 30 minutes typing out a 16-page SNAP application, paper application, and setting it next to their monitor and typing in the address multiple times. Be thinking about it from a perspective of someone in a county where some of the turnover rates, particularly in the systems of SSIS, which we'll talk about some of the success stories there regarding modernization, but where units could see 30 to 40% annual turnover in caseworkers there. And when systems take over a year to learn, that is a tremendous disadvantage for our business models and for the clients that we serve. Think about it also from a property tax perspective. So many of you are aware that we are coming off the highest average property tax levy in over 20 years. What we are very concerned about is we're seeing a proliferation, just like we are at the state, of a trend of HHS spending going next biennium will be the highest category over education. Similarly, we're seeing that in a county. And if your case threshold in the county is 300 cases of SNAP per one worker, and the state next to you is 900, that's an efficiency issue. That is a cost issue as well, because we are spending dollars, limited dollars, dollars we don't have on eligibility workers, when I would posit that that's not necessarily the focus that we're hearing from your communities. We're wanting to work with children, families, we're wanting to work in a variety of priorities, but at a certain point, we're using property tax levy just to help process all these delays. Think about it also in a fraud prevention, identification, and program integrity sense. It goes without saying a 1980s DOS-based system probably doesn't have all the modern capabilities to automatically use AI and try to detect fraud or anomalies, both innocent or intentional. And lastly, and I think this is one of the most important that we all would agree with, is the client and outcomes perspective of this. You get the same calls that we do from elected county commissioners, some of whom are in the room today. And that is from constituents who are scared, who are in a setting already that is disastrous or unstable. They're looking for resources and services that they are entitled to, and they are calling and saying, where am I on this wait list? Where am I in the queue? Why is this taking so long? I have a procedure that I need to get. Am I going to have MA or not? This is what we're concerned about. When one county in the metro area is seeing months of a backlog, and again, with almost a double-digit levy, still paying for 80 new eligibility workers for their levy just last year. That is what we're trying to get to. So as you look at these examples, please keep those lenses in mind on this issue. And that's why we do think that this is an awesome opportunity for everyone to say, hey, none of us were, I don't believe, around in 1980s when Maxis was created, but we can all be part of the solution and hopefully soon. So we'll get right to our presentation and invite Ms. Kathleen Walls up here to show you Maxis.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kathleen Walls. That's W-A-L-L-S. I'm a public assistance program trainer at Dakota County.
Thank you. Go ahead with your presentation as soon as it's ready.
Thank you so much. Please bear with me for just a moment while I get set up here. All right, so what you're going to be seeing this morning is just a brief demonstration of a day in the life of a county financial worker. As I said, I'm a trainer at Dakota County, so it's my job to teach new eligibility workers how to determine eligibility and how to use MAXIS to do so. So MAXIS was new in 1989, and we are still using it to determine eligibility for multiple public assistance programs. So you should have in your packet a colorful one-page handout. The first page says MAXIS Navigation. This is just going to help you understand the tools available to our financial workers to help them understand how to use MAXIS. So using the mouse can be highly problematic, so we have to use the keyboard to navigate this system. So what I've done for you today is I've entered in manually an application into the training region of MAXIS, so none of this information is real. And what we're going to do today is I'm just going to show you what the screens look like and what an approval looks like. And then we're going to have to use the manual override function as well, because for cash assistance for adults, we always have to use manual override function. So again, as I said, what I've done is I've entered in manually all the information from this 9-page application into MAXIS, and I'm going to show you those screens with that client information. So we start out on the self menu of MAXIS. Our function is going to be stat, and to view all the screens, our command is going to be PNLP. And I'm going to go ahead and enter, and we're going to view all these screens just very briefly. All right, so we have some client information. We have address information, household member information, additional household member information. We have the work registration panel. Now, this panel is very important to code correctly, both to get the correct eligibility results for cash assistance and for SNAP. Unfortunately, it's extremely complicated, and our colleagues at the state have developed 9 different handouts, flowcharts, and guides to help our financial workers code this panel correctly. And one of those guides is 16 pages long. And financial workers really have to understand all that information just to get this right. So we have some disability information for our fake applicant, some case review information. And that takes us to our job screen, or panel. So this panel is also extremely important because this is where we record earned income information. So our fake applicant, Annie, has provided some pay stubs, and we have verified that she's earning $344 gross monthly income. Now, on this panel, we have to enter that number 3 different times. So I have to enter into this FS Food Support PIC window, or prospective income calculation. This is where I enter in that calculation for the purposes of getting the SNAP budget correct. I also have to enter in that information in the cash PIC window down here at the bottom right. So I've entered in the $344 of gross monthly earned income for this client 3 times on this panel. And now we're ready to look at our eligibility results. So to look at our eligibility results, our function is Dale. Our command is also Dale. And these are our results. So this is what eligibility results look like to your county financial worker. As I said, we're going to have to use the manual override function to actually create a correct budget for cash and SNAP. So we always approve cash first. So I'm going to put my cursor by this GA or general assistance line. I'm going to select with an F for fiat, which is the manual override function. I'm going to select my reason code of 10 for GA, or general assistance.
Dude, this is so clunky.
And we're going to go through the eligibility results. So I have to choose a file unit type. We're going to view the case tests, and we're going to view the budget. Okay, now we're scrolling through the eligibility results. These are all different eligibility tests that the client has to pass in order to be eligible. We see they're passing all of these tests. That's what we expect to see. The problem, though, is when we get to the prospective budget summary part one. If you remember, on the jobs panel, we entered $344 of gross monthly earned income. Well, we have to enter that again. So I'm going to enter that here. And I hope that I wrote that number down correctly, or I remembered it correctly, because otherwise our budget for cash assistance is not going to be correct. So now I've entered my $344 of gross monthly earned income, and I have generated the correct general assistance grant amount. But this is only for the month of March. In order to get the correct budget for the month of April, I would have to go through and do that procedure all over again. So I'd have to go down here, I would change my month, and I would do that procedure all over again. I'm not going to do that today in the interest of time, but I'm going to show you what I would have to do for SNAP. So because general assistance is countable income within the SNAP budget, I also have to use the manual override function to get the correct results for SNAP as well. So I have my cursor next to my first SNAP result. I select FIAT, the manual override. I have a different reason code that I need to use for food support or SNAP. I'm going to select that, and here I'm going to select the budget. Okay. Again, I hope I really remember correctly the general assistance grant amount, or I wrote it down correctly, because I have to include that in the SNAP budget here. So I'm going to select my PA grants field with an X, and I'm going to enter in my GA grant amount of $207. And now that GA grant amount is being taken into account for the SNAP budget, and we can go ahead and approve the correct SNAP amount of $202. So this is just a taste of one, just one of the systems that the county financial workers are using. There's a lot that need modernizing, and I'm going to hand the mic over to our director, Dana DeMaster, to talk about the next one.
Ms. Walls, chair's privilege, how long did it take you to enter that nine-page application before you could even start this process?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I spent about a half an hour entering the information in the nine-page application manually into the system. And if the application is received online, we still have to manually enter the information because it doesn't interface with the online application.
Thank you. Please proceed. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Dana DeMaster, and I'm the Director of Employment and Economic Assistance at Dakota County. MAXIS, that Kathleen just showed us, is one of many databases and systems that our financial workers use to determine eligibility for the various programs. And today I'm going to be talking about METS, the Minnesota Eligibility Technology System, which is used to determine eligibility for some of the medical assistance programs. METS is fairly new compared to MAXIS. I was in junior high when MAXIS was released, but I was fully adult and working at the Department of Human Services when METS was released in 2014, somewhat responsible in response to the Affordable Care Act. Because it's new, METS has a more modern interface. You can use a mouse with it, and it's not nearly as exciting to watch in a demonstration, so I'm just going to talk about it. But there are some screenshots of what METS look like up on the screen. And a really great thing about that, you know, the modern interface is, like I said, you can use a mouse with it. And there's not quite as much cryptic, non-mouse-driven command work that you saw Kathleen using the PLNP or the DALE command. You're not having that with METS. METS does have some really good improvements over MAXIS and also some really big challenges. And so I'm going to highlight a couple of those today. In terms of improvements, applicants are able to apply online for medical assistance on the MNSURE website. And that information, unlike MAXIS, does auto-populate into METS. And so our workers aren't having to do that dual data entry that the applicant also had to do. And because of that, about 45% of Dakota County's applications are what we call happy path. And the happy path is when the applicant is able to correctly put their information and provide the needed verifications themselves. And like I said, that's about 45% of our applications. The rest require some sort of intervention by a financial worker. And an example of a non-happy path case is when someone applies and does not put their name as it is in the verification systems. So if your name is Michael and you put Mike, you then have to be directed to a financial worker to have that completed. METS also interfaces with several federal databases, so there's real-time verification of information. In Maxis, our SpeedyMart example, we're receiving paper paycheck stubs or an employer statement to verify that income. METS is able to interface with federal databases for things like employment verification, immigration status, residency. And so there's lots of those things where we're able to get that. The computer's doing the work, and so we can concentrate on the more complicated or some of the more personal issues. This also allows for auto renewals. When someone applies a year later, right now they have to have their information checked again to make sure that they're still eligible, and that allows, because the METS has those, talks to those other databases, that can happen automatically. It also has a customer portal, so folks can enter their own documents and do some things themselves. We have many counties have portals for clients for the cash and food programs, but they're unique to the county and they were developed within that county. And so if you were, from a client perspective, if you move from one county to another, the way that you give your verifications for the exact same program is likely going to be different. Where it METS, it's going to be the same. Those are some of the good things. Then there's some challenges. First, there's a very long list of workarounds with a manual that is more than 1,000 pages. And we brought two reams of paper to show you what 1,000 pages would look like printed out, but these are all online and in various places. And so that just gives you an idea of the amount of information that our workers need to learn and understand. Some workarounds are due to more recent policy changes, like things related to the pandemic and changes that we made to medical assistance during the pandemic, as well as like recent changes to immigrant eligibility. Others have been around since METS was born. And so one of those, appropriately so, is adding a baby. And so if someone on medical assistance has a baby, we have to completely close their case and reopen it completely. And so from a client perspective, this results in an auto-generated closure notice. And so the worker has to, you know, think about the customer service there. You've got a new parent with a baby, and it's very stressful, and you're trying to make sure this baby's insured, and you're getting letters from the government saying you don't have health insurance. You're going to have health insurance, but we have to make sure and counsel that person to ignore this notice, but not these other notices. Changing an address is another very complex process. In Maxis, this takes minutes. In METS, you have to change the address for every member of the household. And so if you have a larger household, we've timed our workers, and so even with two people in a household, it's about 15 minutes to change an address in terms of their time. This also, when METS was introduced, there's two different systems that determine eligibility for medical assistance. METS handles most people, but people with disabilities and people in long-term care are still in Maxis. METS has never been able to handle the complexities of some of those cases, and the two systems don't talk. And so if someone becomes disabled or starts to need long-term care, again, we need to close out the METS case. They get that closure notice at a time that is probably pretty stressful, and then we reopen it in Maxis. And so, again, that's all a lot of the manual entry that you saw Kathleen was doing for that case. Large counties are fortunate in some respects that we can have very specialized caseloads. So trainers will train for a specific thing. Like Kathleen just trains Maxis, right? And we have workers who just train METS. The challenge there then is there's a lot of rigidity in our staffing structures. If you have a long-term care worker leave, that's a very difficult position to replace because of the long training time, as well as moving people between healthcare and food. And coming from a large county, we have that option. I am in great admiration of small county workers that don't have that option, and they have to know all of these systems and all of that policy. There are pros and cons to the many different ways we can manage our work, but a challenge with METS is that you have to follow the steps exactly. And so that means that the technology is determining our work processes rather than the other way around, where technology is enhancing our work processes. The final thing I'll talk about is the duplication issue. And so DHS, the Department of Human Services, uses personal identification numbers that should be unique to an individual to be able to handle enrollment eligibility and pay for services. And we want to make sure that these remain one person, one number. And so for METS, there's an increase in duplication for a lot of reasons, one of which is the client being able to go in and enter their own information. And then there's systems issues where that generates duplicates at times and does not have the ability to recognize that and clean those up. And so that causes challenges where the workers are having to identify, is this Mike Johnson or Michael Johnson, and make sure and really clean up those duplicate issues to ensure that we're paying for services appropriately. And so that is some of the METS highlights. And I'm going to hand it off to Dan Jensen from Olmsted County, who's going to talk a bit about the Social Services Information System, or SSIS.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity to speak here. My name is Dan Jensen, Associate Director at Olmsted County. I've also been working for a very long time in the modernization side, and appreciate just the opportunity to talk with you today. So the first thing we want to discuss is SSIS. Last year we were testifying, working closely with the state, and thank you to all of you who worked and supported to be able to move sometimes we say funding, it was an investment in the children's side of replacing SSIS. The champions is a very long list. Just to call out a few, Torkelson, Nash, Knorr, Vernon, there's many others that were involved in this. That's the kind of work that we need to be able to move this modernization work forward. We can't stop with SSIS. We have to start walking into some of these other areas. We're going to be able to get away from what we call the wheel of death, and that's quite literally watching these things spin as our time just goes away. The architecture for SSIS was really beyond modernizing. We needed to replace that system, and we'll be able to get away from all of the time wasters that our staff are experiencing on a daily basis. Our workers, our managers, but most importantly, the people within our community will be better served as our staff will be able to spend more time with them and less time sitting behind screens babysitting our systems. So again, thank you for that. Really pivoting and focusing on the SSIS replacement, give you a really short brief update of where we're at today. The RFP process is going through the vetting work that's right now. We have 105 county subject matter experts that are on multiple work groups partnering with the state on various stages of where this is at. We have modernization and we have staffing leadership that are meeting regularly monthly with the state, and all of that is very, very appreciated. I'm gonna also briefly talk about the integration layer. That is something that's starting to roll out. Our conversations have been promising on that as we're working through with the state on how we're going to integrate that, what our policies are gonna be, and how we're gonna move that forward. So we appreciate that great work with the state. On the bridging side of things, we really have to zoom out and talk about some of the challenges that are in front of us. The work that's been happening really needs, we need immediate needs, we have bridging needs, we have long-term systems replacement needs. So we're breaking this out into three different sections. And frankly, thank you to the local county investment around the county leadership. We have multiple bridging needs that are in flight, and that has been helping us to be able to design systems and work that's going to allow us to move that bridging work forward. But we're also designing it in ways that while it may be in 5 or 10 counties, it'll be able to be replicated, copied, and moved into other counties. And that's going to allow us to be able to move this work forward. It's not just going to sit and rest in the few counties that are initially designing it. The The important part of this is while counties have been able to invest in these initial bridging efforts, we have pilots, we have tools that are in flight. We're seeing successes from them today. We don't have the nominal amount of money that's required to be able to move these into a statewide rollout. And that is something that we will be coming back and asking for, is that nominal amount of resource. I'm just going to go through these very, very quickly. The scripting collaborative is building workflows that are used in new system work. The graphical overlay is building modern system user interfaces that allow our workers to interact with these character-based systems in a different way. Artificial intelligence is supporting our workers. We're getting them up to speed faster. We're starting to answer some basic workflow questions on the phone. What are your hours? What's your address? And then routing them to the correct places. That's saving us staff time. And the data depot, we're starting to leverage data from many different state systems so that we can build out dashboards, case audits, client insights. We can coordinate services. We're also ready to work on program integrity. We were piloting the development of three dashboards around program integrity in Olmsted. And just looking at that, we found five areas very quickly in just testing that. So very quickly, we were able to respond to those in ways that we wouldn't have been able to find those without those tools. We're ready to deploy those and move those statewide. So as we also look at the data warehouse, we need to be able to move our DHS and DCYF policies into the data warehouse. So if you guys are interested in working in Maxis as a side job, you know, we have applications available up here. You saw the two reams. That was just representing METS if we printed it out. Imagine two more reams that would represent Maxis. Imagine, frankly, Matt said, we're not carrying that much paper over to demonstrate what would really take. And each of these is in a different format, in a different shape, behind different firewalls. If we could have access to that in the data warehouse, we could use AI to present that data. We could have reports that said, hey, this question has been asked six times. Let's do a little quick training on that. Staff that are maybe stepping into an area to do backup they haven't worked in 2 years, they could quickly see what these workflows are. They don't have to figure out where they have to go and go into all these different areas. So it takes 2 years to train and get somebody comfortable. Our long-term staff are turning over, they're retiring. Our short-term staff, our new staff, are not staying the 2 years it takes. We have got to get them up to speed. We have got to get better tools in there. All right, we need also have immediate policy fixes that are needed, and we need to be able to work through these to get them in place. I'm not gonna go through all of those in the interest of time, but happy to have a longer conversation or answer any questions that were available on there. Our long-term vision in working with the state is that we have to get to an integration platform. Mm-hmm. Imagine you guys are looking at a parking lot full of broken down cars. Every morning we're pumping the air in the tires, we're spraying ether in to start the engines, we're dealing with broken windshields and cracked windshields. We can replace every one of those cars, but unless we integrate them, unless they can talk to each other, we're still gonna have to enter the address changes 5, 6, 7 times. We're still gonna have to try to figure out if the person changed the address for their SNAP benefits, but SSIS had never heard about that, so they're still looking at the old address. We can't do coordinated plans of care where our most challenging clients need our staff to be able to understand what's happening and work together in a secure way so that they can build common plans of care. These are the tools that can come to us through a long-term platform modernization where we're truly getting to an integration layer. That's the challenge of where we need to be able to move this body of work forward in the long term. So in conclusion, 37 years on Maxis. Let's not celebrate the 50th anniversary of Maxis. I think we can all agree on that. Counties invested heavily, EDMS, Blue Zone Scripting. We've invested heavily in starting to invest in AI, a number of different tools. We need to be able to bring our tools into partnership with the state and start to integrate them together. It makes no sense that when we have nearly 70 counties on the same EDMS system and have invested millions that we can't work with the state and doing integration on these kinds of tools into the work that's happening. We need to strengthen our partnerships, and we appreciate the opportunity to work with the state, strengthen those partnerships. We appreciate the work that you're doing, paying attention to this, and the funding that's going to be needed to move this work forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation, Mr. Jensen. Members, all these folks will be around. If you have specific questions for them later, we can handle that. I'm again encouraging you to note your questions and get on the list, and we will ask as many questions as we have time for. Please continue with your presentation. Who's coming? Who's next?
So I think what the two things that stuck out to me there, and thank you, Ms. Dan, for presenting that. When we talk about workforce and we keep pointing to this ream of paper of just being one manual that folks use for one of the systems, think about the workforce shortages that we already have in local government. And think about trying to hire someone who's excited and coming out of college or whatnot, or coming from various professional backgrounds, wanting to help children and families. And when they get to their office chair, they're sitting in front of these systems. It is like learning a new language. We're lucky if we can keep them there and invested for the first couple months of learning basically how to code and work through these systems. But then to keep them there is also a challenge. It's not sustainable for counties. It just simply is not. It's not a system that should be funded by the property taxpayer, which we are doing. And we talk about this a lot. We talked about it last week. We have a tax chair here with us today. We talked about the fact that we are using disproportionately amount of local property tax levy to fund our health and human services mandates in Minnesota. We can't step away and not do SNAP administration. The state has told us we do that. We can't step away and say we're not going to do Medicaid eligibility. The state has said we do that. We're one of nine states in the nation that do this. So we're given tools. We're given a ship to steer through a storm without a rudder. And I think that's why you're seeing this desperation from us these last few years of just saying the system is beyond repair, broken and in need of repair. And the last thing that I would say is just a reminder of also the taxpayers that dollars that are being spent right now. When you hear about those pilot projects that Mr. Jensen was talking about, those are county-funded pilot projects. So aside from the fact that we're using levy dollars on mandated services, we're covering SNAP administration costs already on behalf of the state, we're also using property tax levies to fund IT experts locally to put masks on these DOS-based systems. If you're in Hennepin County, they're spending millions of dollars of taxpayer resources to try to make these systems just a tad more functional. Even though we don't have access to the back end, we're trying to be creative on the front end because we can no longer wait. So I'll pivot back to Ms. Torkelson too.
Yeah, Britta Torkelson again, Minnesota Rural Counties. Those staffing issues and the property tax impacts are felt with an even finer point in some of our smaller counties. As was mentioned by some of my colleagues earlier, imagine a department of fewer than 10 eligibility workers and the immense pressure that they feel of knowing the years of knowledge that they hold and feeling like maybe they're irreplaceable. Now they're facing retirement, and a county is looking for a replacement, and they're lucky enough to find one, and it takes a year, 2 years to train them to be competent. Think about the amounts of resources, both in time and money, that that small county is spending to get that person up to speed. Just a 1% levy increase is about $100K for some of our smaller counties, just to put that into perspective. As Matt said, this is simply unsustainable, and these smaller counties, along with our larger counties, are facing these incredibly urgent needs.
And so our last call, as we did bring gifts, we brought buttons for those of you who haven't received one right now, Modernize Now buttons, which we'll leave here for the committee. But the other thing that we want to talk about is we realize that there are short-term needs and bridging relief that we're coming to and saying we have to do this year, especially with federal law changes and things that we'll have to be asked to administer. We have to have some of these standard policy changes that have been on our list. We also feel like we deserve a framework and a picture of what the future entails about system replacement. We need that desperately, and we should get a shovel in the ground to start that process now. And the last thing is more of a policy and philosophical question. I would say that there are plenty of tables at which counties sit. And so this is one where with state agency partners, maybe there are too many tables. Maybe there is too many inefficiency of the tables that we have. But what we are going to be asking for more strongly this year is that we're no longer just consulted with a lowercase c. Counties operate these systems on behalf of the state. And we should have some power in deciding our own destiny when it comes to what the future replacement of these systems are. Not just consumer report groups that are tested or some questions asked, but but sitting at the table, deciding whether it comes to scope of vendor RFPs, prioritization of resourcing, funding asks, timelines, or vendor selections. Those are things that our counties will want to work with you as elected leaders to see where do we fit into this narrative. So thank you for the time today, and I know you have other presenters too. We'll be standing around if there are other questions.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It's greatly appreciated. Well, next we'll call up DHS and have their presentation. I'm sorry, I misspoke. Actually, it's DCYF is first. My fault. But I see we have both commissioners at the table, so that will make this whole thing much more efficient. That's great. And as soon as you're ready, we'll dive into your presentation. I've scheduled about 15 minutes for each department, so I realize we're already over time a little bit, so you may have to skip some things to get it into 15 minutes. I appreciate that, but let's try to move as quickly as possible. So first, from DCYF, I welcome the commissioner. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, and as soon as you're ready, go ahead with your presentation.
Okay. All right, for the record, I'm Tiki Brown, the commissioner of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Thank you, Chair Torkelson, and committee members for the opportunity to discuss information technology updates and modernization underway at the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Okay. The Minnesota Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Oh, it seems like we're having technical issues. I apologize. I'll keep talking in the interest of time while we continue to work on the technology. The Minnesota Department of Children, Youth, and Families, which I'll refer to as DCYF, is responsible for overseeing and supporting programs that serve children and families across Minnesota. DCYF's goal is to support children and families in a coordinated, family-centered way so they have what they need to thrive. Modernizing our systems is critical to achieving the goal. It allows staff to see the full picture of families' needs, share information efficiently across programs, and deliver services in a timely, connected way. Without modern tools and processes, even the best policies and programs can't fully reach the families who need them. Our approach is to introduce an ecosystem of tools that work together to provide support to the families who administer our programs and offer more self-service options to Minnesota. We've also heard clearly from our partners that it is not feasible to wait years for solutions. Workers need support now. That's why our vision for modernization is to prioritize steady, visible improvements that reduce processing time and better support workers in the near term while intentionally laying the foundation for more connected, sustainable systems in the future. At the Minnesota Department of Children, Youth, and Families, our work is guided by a whole family approach. We understand that children's well-being is closely tied to the stability, health, and economic security of their caregivers. By focusing on the whole family, we strengthen caregivers' stability and opportunity, providing children with the foundation they need to thrive. Aligning modernization to the whole family approach means three things. First, technology that connects. One story and one plan. Our systems need to connect to each other so county workers, tribal partners, and providers see what they need without families repeating themselves. Second, operations that align. Common templates and workflows that make service delivery consistent and faster. Family experiences the same steps and the same definitions no matter the system. And third, policies that reflect real needs. We co-design with staff, counties, tribal nations, providers, and families. We use lived experience and disaggregated data to remove the barriers and improve equity. And the result is simple. Fewer handoffs, duplicate entry, quicker assistance, and more trust. That's how our strategic plan shows up in the daily work. So slide 4 showcases some of the different technology solutions that support DCYF's mission. Today's presentation will focus on some of the major systems that support DCYF programs: the Social Service Information System, or SSIS, MAXIS, Minnesota Electronic Child Care, or MEC Squared, and PRISM. I'll share how investments during previous legislative sessions support the operations and modernization of these systems, as well as other work we are doing to improve the experience of people who use these systems. The next slide summarizes three different appropriations DCYF received related to system modernization in recent years. We'll share updates about how these funds are being spent. The 2023 appropriation, titled Integrated Services for Children and Families, included $36.9 million for several different projects. To date, approximately $5.9 million has been spent, and plans have been approved for all but $13.7 million. Our plans are moving quickly. Since February, we have allocated almost $4 million additionally for updates to PRISM and MAXIS. Plans for the remaining funds are underway to address technical feasibility issues that we have encountered. Next, I'll move into SSIS. The Social Services Information System, or SSIS, is a system that supports data entry, tracking, reporting, and fiscal claiming across child and adult social service programs. In 2023, we received $2 million to review the current state of the system to identify opportunities and reduce the administrative burden on child protection workers, to assess the technical stability of the program, and to plan for modernization. We've completed the paperwork reduction review as well as the technical assessment. Both assessments led us to the conclusion that there were limited improvements that could be made with the existing system. With the remaining funds, we implemented time entry transformation, which I'll share about in the next slide. We also received additional funding for DCYF and Minute staff to support federal requirements known as the Comprehensive Child Welfare Information System, or CWIS. And as we have shifted towards modernization, we have adjusted our staffing strategy accordingly. We're using these funds to staff a team that will ensure a smooth transition to the new system and support users of the current system during the transition process. Lessons learned from the paperwork reduction review indicated that there was a significant need to address the way workers track their time in SSIS. Time tracking is a required and critical component for reimbursement, and due to the complex nature of the child welfare work, was particularly burdensome. And so last year, we launched a statewide time entry transformation tool, and the new time entry tool addresses many of the county worker pain points. We engaged with workers throughout this entire process to ensure we were building something that would meet their needs. Workers who tested the technology report saving 2 to 5 hours per week on their data entry requirements. And the quotes on this slide are from county workers. It's hard to sum it up better than this. This work succeeded because we built it together with counties, with partners, and with people who use the system every day. That success and that approach has guided our work as we have moved into child welfare modernization. In 2024, DCYF received $10 million to modernize the child welfare functions that are currently within the SSIS system. In 2025, we received another $35 million for child welfare modernization. Our team has been working towards an ambitious timeline of spring of 2026 to submit our request for proposal to the Federal Administration for Children and Families for their approval. Accomplishments to date include the development and submission of planning materials for federal approval. We have solicited, selected, and onboarded a readiness and planning vendor to support RFP development. We have facilitated 38 focus groups with county workers and state staff, and we're engaging with tribal nations as we draft our RFP. The scope of our child welfare modernization system is still being finalized as we draft the request for proposals. The scope includes child welfare broadly, from prevention to permanency, and it includes functionalities such as intake, assessment, case management, eligibility, payments, and claiming for federal child welfare funding, in addition to federal reporting. Programs that are generally out of scope for this project include adult protective services and adult social services. We are collaborating with DHS on a plan to support these programs, and there is some overlap in the functionality across children's and adult programs, which provides some opportunity for efficiencies. At the same time, expanding that scope will cause additional costs to occur. So our next steps include finalizing the RFP, the requirements, our implementation planning document for federal review, and at the same time, we will be ramping up our data cleanup and our ongoing data conversion readiness work and continuing our organizational change readiness to ensure that we are ready to go when the RFP is ready. Next, I'll move to MAXIS. MAXIS determines eligibility for public assistance and some health care cases, calculates payments, and issues payments statewide. MEC Squared is a related system that is used to administer the child care assistance program. In 2023, we received appropriations to support two projects that relate to these systems. The backlog project includes funding for staff at DCYF and MINIT, who are focused on reducing the backlog of work in MEC Squared and MAXIS. The team has reduced the risk of federal financial sanctions, improving efficiency and accuracy for county and tribal eligibility workers. And they're making great progress. We have found that the backlog of work continues to be of unsustainable size, and we're exploring additional options for how to address this issue, and believe that our current plan, which I'll describe in a few minutes, will help create some additional possibilities. Next, the project to improve notices that recipients receive would both make information about benefits easier for people to understand, and improve compliance. Today, notices are hardwired or hard-coded into MAXIS, making it very resource-intensive to update them and requiring workers to manually edit them. This project started with a proof of concept that yielded an easy-to-read notice. However, the inability to pull case-specific information from MAXIS to create the notices stopped our progress forward. Since then, a technical solution has been found. So the remaining funds allocated in this project will be used in support of the technical solution that will allow us to connect modern solutions to MAXIS. While we have not received funds for MAXIS modernization, we are charting a path forward. The age of the system and specific technology that MAXIS uses makes it impossible for us to introduce modern tools that enhance the system. For example, when people apply online through MN Benefits, the application data cannot be automatically added to MAXIS because the infrastructure is not available to do so. We have contracted with a vendor to implement a small pilot to facilitate the transfer of data to MN Benefits, our online application tool, into MAXIS. This is a first step towards modernizing MAXIS, and it's a critical foundation. The technical solution that we've identified that I've referenced throughout is known as the integration layer, and it allows us to connect MAXIS to other systems so that they can securely share data and function as a more unified ecosystem. It'll allow us to deliver meaningful improvements through modern tools sooner via incremental modernization. And it reduces the risk by strengthening, not disrupting, systems counties and tribal nations rely on today. I'll then move to PRISM. In 2023, there's an appropriation for children and families to include $13.4 million for child support modernization. This includes PRISM, the system used by workers to administer the child support program and the Minnesota Child Support Online, which is an online portal for families. Minnesota had two options to proceed, and after pursuing the first option, which was federally recommended, we discovered technical infrastructure difficulties. A portion of funds was used to obtain technical advice on the next step. As a result, we now have a revised approach to PRISM modernization. The first step of this plan is to utilize this integration layer that we are currently implementing for MAXIS, which has opened up new technical possibilities. The next step is to obtain federal approval for this plan, which will allow us to leverage federal matching dollars for the remaining $13 million for this project. $700,000 of these funds have already been allocated to complete the federally required study that is necessary for federal approval. Chair and members, we do have a vision to implement improvements in the near term while charting a path that is strategic and sustainable for the long term. In collaboration with our partners and other state agencies, counties, tribal nations, and providers, we're prioritizing solutions that will improve service delivery. The funds and support of the legislature for these technology solutions have enabled incredible technical advancements to these systems that I've mentioned today. And we look forward to continuing the conversations about additional solutions and improvements to implement and sustain new technology. Thank you for your support, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. So we'll go ahead, if you're ready, right into DHS.
Good morning, Chair Torkelson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Shireen Gandhi, and I have the honor of serving as Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. At DHS, our core vision of modernization is to reinvent human services delivery by meeting the needs of residents, counties, tribal nations, and providers, creating a better, easier experience for everyone. The key elements of the vision are to be person-centered, focusing on people's needs, not program structures, and to reduce pain points for clients, providers, counties, tribal nations, and staff. To have integrated modern digital platforms by replacing aging fragmented systems with connected digital tools that support a unified view of clients and programs across agencies. To provide simpler access to services using a no-wrong door to apply, update, or interact online, mobile, or in person. To streamline processes to reduce duplication and administrative burden to deliver services faster, more accurately, and more efficiently. To be data-driven and outcome-focused using modern data and analytics to measure outcomes and improve decisions with platforms that support transparency and accountability, to use collaborative delivery model that aligns DHS, counties, tribal nations, providers, and community partners with shared service delivery and integrated operations. During the 2023 legislative session, the state made a significant one-time investment in technology to modernize human services, improve program integrity, and strengthen service delivery for Minnesotans. There were no investments to replace systems. The investments focus on the end user's experience and needs. These efforts involve ongoing iterative development of products, including IT tools, functionality, and applications intended to develop a person-centered human services system to support modernization. It's important to understand our modernization in context with the current challenges. DHS has an administrative budget of 2 to 3%, which includes all personnel, staffing, and IT systems spending. Our IT budget is 1.3% of total operating expenses compared to the peer average of 4.1%. Also, the demand for work exceeds staff resources. For example, between 2023 and 2026, DHS split into three agencies and managed the COVID Medicaid renewals and had over 100 legislative systems initiatives. Many of those initiatives have mandated effective dates, and they touch the same systems we are working on to modernize. Modernization-related projects represent about 5% of the IT portfolio projects and are largely one-time funding. While these investments were significant, sustained and transformational modernization will require ongoing investment in MINUTE and DHS-based funding. This table captures the landscape of current modernization and program changes. Our current modernization work has focused on user experience, program delivery, including policy changes, the incremental improvements in our legacy systems to address critical needs and core infrastructure projects required to ultimately support complete modernization. Next slide. In 2023, the service delivery transformation funding was appropriated to support advancing work across DHS, which has now been split into three agencies. The funding here is primarily for DHS systems, although the first line includes supports both DHS and DCYF. I'd like to note that these funding requests were originally for ongoing funding, but in the final agreement, they were made one time with the idea that the appropriation would be spent over several years. This is the current status of funding, noting the original allocation and what is remaining. I'll share some modernization successes as well as planned uses for the remaining funds.
I'm sorry, Commissioner. I think you might have misspoken. You said 1 year. Didn't you mean multiple years, that these allocations were meant to be spent over multiple years?
Yes. We had asked for ongoing funding, and then what I said was we received a one-time appropriation in 23 to be spent over multiple years.
Multiple years. Thank you.
Correct. At DHS, as we work toward modernizing systems, we are acutely focused on collaborating with and achieving positive results for counties and tribal nations. Some of our successes to date are MET's Continuous Coverage Unwind Project. This is coming out of the continuous coverage for Medicaid during the COVID pandemic. DHS, counties, and tribes had to work differently to determine eligibility for Medicaid. DHS built a renewal tool that helped enrollees look up their enrollment date, stepped in to help counties process renewals to ease the workload, and enhanced communication channels to engage counties, tribes, enrollees, navigators, and community partners. As part of this effort, DHS made improving automatic renewals a top priority. This is a requirement from CMS that we use certain official electronic data sources to determine eligibility. We focused on quick fixes and then did a deeper review and added larger improvements over time. The result was DHS went from 17% of renewals being completed automatically using official records to 70% by the end of the pandemic, which saved 115,725 worker processing hours. Minnesota has kept this auto-renew rate high for the last 3 years, and in recent months we've been above 76%, which continues to save county workers processing hours. DHS has also been investing in modern enterprise data and analytics capability that improves oversight, strengthens fraud detection, and supports better service delivery. Analytics improves fraud detection by bringing together data from eligibility systems, claim systems, provider licensing systems, and other program data to identify patterns that would otherwise be difficult to detect. Advanced analytics allows DHS staff to flag unusual billing patterns, sudden utilization spikes, or providers whose activity falls outside expected norms. These tools allow investigators and program integrity teams to focus their efforts on the highest risk activity, improving the effectiveness of our audits and reviews. Operational dashboards allow program leaders and county partners to monitor things like application processing timelines, renewal rates, case backlogs, and service utilization patterns. This helps us identify bottlenecks and make improvements that reduce administrative burden and speed up service delivery. The Provider Licensing Hub is another success. It is a new single digital platform for provider licensing, registration, and program participation. The Provider Hub is used by child care center and certified child care center providers to apply for and manage social service licenses, funding and participation, and was recently expanded to provisional licensure for autism centers. The hub reduces paperwork, improves transparency, and simplifies how providers interact with the state. But beyond improving the experience, the hub also strengthens oversight and regulatory monitoring. Centralizing provider data gives the state better visibility into provider participation across programs, helps ensure licensing requirements are being met. A key benefit is also the ability to align provider licensing data with provider payment and claims data, which helps to identify potential compliance concerns and strengthens our program integrity efforts. Another success is MMIS pharmacy module. This modernization initiative aimed to reduce client frustrations due to delayed prescription access. The delay was caused in part by the prior authorization process and limited customer support hours. The goal was to expand a call center for both members and providers from the existing 8 hours per weekday to a 24/7 operation aligned with typical pharmacy hours and a response time of 60 seconds or less. So this is a success of pulling a piece out of MMIS and modernizing it by beginning to take sections out of the old system into something new. In terms of transforming service delivery, we will continue to fund the product teams at DCYF and DHS for an additional year to fund high-impact one-time enhancements that reduce burden for clients and workers and improve coordination across the programs and advance enterprise architecture, data governance, and product management to reduce risk and cost in future system modernization. Licensing transformation will continue with the platform expanded in phases to include additional provider types, such as foster care and Medicaid providers. In terms of upcoming planned use for METS and MMIS, with the Minnesota's Medicaid Enterprise System, or MES, we are working to increase agility, starting with externalized eligibility rules engine using a competitor bake-off approach. Updating this functionality outside of METS will save time and money and move us a step further down the road to modernizing our eligibility and enrollment system. Also underway are near-term improvements for county workers that reduce manual work and improve user experience, as well as advance API integration to support prepayment review, county access to state data, and connections to legacy systems. Funding for METS will be used to comply with HR 1 changes with an eye toward easing county workload burdens and to pilot solutions that improve outcomes for populations currently served through legacy systems, upgrading to more secure login portals for enrollees, and delivering immediate fixes of identified high-impact issues. For MMIS, I think one more on that previous slide. For MMIS, we will continue building a shared infrastructure that supports future Medicaid system modernization, such as upgrading secure login capabilities for several MMIS subsystems. So in closing, the roadmap and the path forward for our modernization. Where we are is we are making some good foundational progress, as you see in column one. We have achieved some smaller wins within our current systems, and we're working toward connected capabilities, which is column two. And Minnesota can't deliver the simpler, faster, more connected human services system we all want without ongoing predictable investment in modernization, not just one-time funds. The foundation is built, the results to date are real, but sustaining progress requires sustained funding to modernize our core capabilities, to reduce county and tribal burden, and retire the high-risk legacy systems. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm going to call up Commissioner Combs at this time for a few questions. I realize he wasn't on the agenda, but I did speak to him before the meeting started, and he can just take the third chair there. That's just fine. Please identify yourself for the record, Commissioner Tomes, and if you'd like to make some opening remarks, I'm especially focused on SSIS and kind of the nature of that project as it's moving forward.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson and committee members. For the record, my name is Tarek Tomes. I am the Commissioner of Minnesota IT Services and the Chief Information Officer for the State of Minnesota. I don't have any remarks prepared, but just a few comments that I think I would like to make. One, Chair Torkelson, would really like to thank you and other legislators, Representative Nash and Representative Bonner, Senator Wicklund, and others, for your continued passion surrounding how we can make systems work better for people, which directly led to the funding to modernize the child welfare information system in Minnesota. The conversation, you know, that we have heard and the testimonies from everyone, I think they're the absolute right conversation, and I am incredibly excited that it is a center point of conversation related to where we go with the various systems that serve people that are within our larger human services system and our child, youth, and families system. You have heard me say this before, when a family or a child that was in the child welfare system comes back and asks us, you know, what kind of tools did you use to help me, that I hope it's a vision and a picture of something that we can collectively be proud of. I think one of the things that is really, really important, and I think the committee members, the legislature, Governor Walz and others, my peers, Commissioner Gandhi and Commissioner Brown and so many others, county members and tribal nation members, that we focus on outcomes and not technology. I think if we lead with replacing technologies, we may only implement the same policies and you know, mechanisms and solutions and a newer technology, and it won't yield or lead to different or better outcomes. When I first started in my role, you were instrumental in a bipartisan effort to replace the driver and vehicle services system. Within a year, that was up and running and has been successful ever since. That was, you know, in 2019. And I think bipartisan efforts such as this will lead ultimately to a joint roadmap. I think one of the things that will be crucial for the state of Minnesota is that the path and the journey to where we go is one that is charted together, that counties, tribal nations, the state have a shared vision for the modernization priorities related to how we work and the opportunities that it represents, the outcomes that it may improve, and that we pour resources into improving those outcomes, and that we hold up the expectations of those outcomes as a outcome or byproduct of the investment that was made. The outcome simply cannot be to make an old technology newer. The outcome really has to be, you know, serving a child faster. A child, you know, sees a physician that's in the child welfare system, you know, within 30 days because of innovations in technology that support those mechanisms and processes. As it relates to SSIS modernization in particular, I think the decision to fund the modernization of the child welfare information system is a really, really crucial step to unlocking a larger roadmap. The implementation of a child welfare information system not only will serve the children and families in a meaningful way and connect them with the services and the care and allow our social workers to work in a mechanism, you know, similar to how physicians work, where they have every opportunity to see the types of things that are impacting kids. But the decision related to the technology path that will be determined there and hopefully determined, you know, within the next 6 to 9 months will also unlock the modernization path potentially for the remainder of the SSIS modules. Some have a lot of overlap. Adult services, very similar to the services that are provided to children in the child welfare information system. It's very possible that a future procurement opportunity related to that direction could serve both of those needs. Irrespective of that, though, the technology decision that will be made related to the types of platforms that will support the future child welfare information system will allow for a joint roadmap and a joint strategy for how to modernize the remaining SSIS modules. Some of those are much smaller and will be modernized well before a child welfare information system actually goes online. Some are larger and more complex. Lastly, you know, I think just from an aspirational perspective, we're really in a place as it relates to capabilities, certainly within the state and the things that have been modernized, paid family medical leave rolled out incredibly successfully, you know, on time, on budget with tremendous capabilities modernization that's happening at the Department of Corrections, modernization that has happened with the unemployment insurance system, child welfare information, I mean, the ability to modernize, you know, so many of these other systems, driver and vehicle services. Technology will not and should not be the inhibitor. The state of technology and the capabilities that are available should not be an inhibitor to anything that we have aspirationally as it relates to how we serve people better.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. You know, I was thinking about this. I've been thinking about this a lot, of course. And in relation to the SSIS work, I was a little worried that perhaps we were in the process of creating another silo. What you've just said indicates to me that that's not true, but can you just kind of flesh that out a little more? Because I, you know, worked very hard on the SSI thing, but I just hope that we're not creating something that is wonderful and modern, but is not going to be adaptable across across the board.
Chair Torkelson and committee members, I think that's a really great question, and I would expect by no means would any solution that's selected to support child welfare be something that does not highly interoperate and allow for complete integration and capabilities to get data in and out and interoperability with other systems. When you approach this work, you know, 15, 20 years ago, because there weren't solutions in the marketplace, generally solutions were built. And they were built in this large monolithic way that really served everything. And when a new need came about, you just added to the system that created it. And that's what led, you know, to the uses that SSIS has. Now I think it's incumbent to use solutions in the marketplace that are built, purpose-built for the opportunities that are in front of us, to not build these large monolithic constructs, but to make sure that they tie together, that they integrate, that they allow for transparent sharing of data and information. And I think that joint roadmap will allow us to modernize the remaining SSIS modules, not just successfully, but in a way that allows for much greater integration of data, much greater exploration of the data that traverses those systems to be analyzed, so that investments that are made in these program areas can be made in an even more data-driven manner.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. I realize you're a short timer, and I hope you've hope that you have instilled this same attitude in your whoever comes after you. I thank you for your work on these issues at the time you've been with the state. I'd like Matt Hilgart to come back up so he's available for questions, and we're going to move to questions now. And I'm going to start with Representative Nash, and as I said earlier, I'm going to alternate between parties so that we keep things as balanced as possible. And I will remind members once more, please state your question in the form of a question, and we'll, that way we can keep things moving. Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tomes, you and I actually worked on drafting the language to update SSIS together, and I think bipartisan is absolutely the key word that we were talking about, to make sure that the other thing that you just brought up is that it could serve as the basis to bring in the rest of these modules through really a modular approach to bringing all these other things into play. But the question that I have for you is, in your opinion, the technology refresh, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's not really enough. We really need to make it more about business processes and listen to things from the counties. And this same question for Mr. Hilgart. Listening to the counties and understanding what they go through is probably more valuable than trying to take what we currently have and stuffing it into a new piece of software. Is that your take as well?
Chair Torkelson, Representative Nash, and committee members, absolutely. And you're a part of, and thank you for being part of the Technology Advisory Committee, and as a part of that started as the Blue Ribbon Council on Technology, and now exists as the Technology Advisory Committee. One of the artifacts that committee created, and it includes private sector and public sector membership, is what we refer to as the modernization playbook. And the modernization playbook really leads not with technology. The modernization playbook really leads with a firm understanding of where we want to go from an outcomes perspective, and then making sure that the technology meets those particular outcomes. In areas where that technology modernization playbook has been implemented, most recently paid family medical leave, we see the highest amount of success in program areas. And so it's really important, if you think about a technology that's been around for 20 years, that represents 20-year-old ways of working and a lot of workarounds and a lot of things that have been layered on top that you know make things not incredibly effective. When I think about eligibility systems in Minnesota, and I don't know, you know, exactly how many numbers. Luckily, I think artificial intelligence can probably help us get at this number. I would guess that eligibility as it relates to the human services space and the DCYF space is captured in a lot of different places in law, which makes the implementation so much more complex. And so simplifying where eligibility is governed, you know, sometimes the dollar threshold may be $20,000, sometimes $22,000, sometimes $23,000 for different programs. But continuing to pull that type of work together that leads to much cleaner approaches to how eligibility should be implemented opens the marketplace for our vendor community much broader as well. The greater consistency related to, you know, how we govern things, the greater the marketplace opportunities and the greater the bang for the buck our taxpayers are going to get for what it costs to support these programs.
Follow-up, Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Tomes, if you could, there has been conversation around risk of not doing anything, but also was in a meeting with Commissioner Gandhi where she was fearful that implementing something new might also be overly risky. I think from my take as somebody who's worked in the technology world for a long time, and we've talked about this, admiring the problem that we've allowed to perpetuate for a long time is infinitely more risky because you've got an easier on-ramp to compromise these platforms and going to something that is going to be more of an enterprise piece of software actually shores up some of the weaknesses, standardizes databases, standardizes the interoperability between applications so that you can actually begin sniffing out fraud or overuse. So somebody in one area that is signed up for benefits that precludes them from signing up in another area for benefits, having a common ID and having a way to track those between the platforms actually reduces our risk and reduces the fraud. If you could maybe answer that, because I think that is probably one of the biggest things that we need to pay attention to and make sure that we fund this and not allow the conversations and the vicissitudes of negotiations to take us off track, like trying to defund this that we were doing and put it towards things like food shelves and other stuff. So if you would.
Chair Torkelson, Representative Nash, and committee members, I just want to make sure I understand the question. If you could just one more time with the question.
This minimizes the risk that we entertain as a state, gives us greater flexibility, and provides a greater defensive footprint for people like Mr. Israel, or so that we can actually shore up the data that we contain within these databases.
Chair Torkelson, Representative Nash, committee members, absolutely 100%. Certainly, modern capabilities that underpin our service areas are going to be inherently easier to protect. They're going to contain more constructs that allow for integration from both cyber threats and just a broader sharing of information. Well, one of the things that I was struck by, just you know, by way of example, if you will, the tremendous and I don't remember the person's name that you know shared the Mets perspective. You know, there were a lot of positive attributes as it relates to modern interface. It's a platform you know that is continually still modernized. And sometimes the how we implement these capabilities and the policies that govern, you know, these types of technologies are actually what's at the core of a problem, not necessarily the technology. For example, adding a second child, you know, for a family should never necessitate adding a family all over again. Work that's underway to remediate that. Not a platform issue, not a technology issue by any stretch of the imagination. And so I think we have to just, you know, be careful of making sure we understand where technology opportunities exist. Clearly, they exist in the MAXA space, where there are policy and programmatic opportunities to make sure that we're continuing to integrate these programs better.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Nash's first question was addressed to both you and Mr. Hilgard. I neglected to give him a chance to make his comments. Would you do that at this time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, there was a lot of head shaking when Commissioner Tomes was speaking because I think those are generally agreeable premises. I will also say to Commissioner Tomes and Commissioner Brown as well, I feel like at this point in time, they probably have the security code to our building. They've been in our space a lot trying to talk with us. I still think that there needs to be a sincere conversation at the legislature about having a more proactive, statutory-driven county role and power in deciding these systems and the prioritization, the timelines, the project scope, et cetera. I can totally understand why, from an administrative perspective, regardless, it would be something where, oh boy, that control seems to be coming away from us. But it is a consultative process. It's a partnership-based process. And I think some of the things that we're seeing is just that it's not trickling down. So the 2023 legislation that provided a tremendous amount of historic resources. Yes, it was one-time funding. The enabling legislation, I was looking at it on my phone, is less than a page long, a page and a half double-spaced in the legal size paper. So it does have a tremendous amount of flexibility. It cites counties once. It doesn't give us a new kind of control of how we spend those resources. But we haven't seen that trickle down to the project scopes that we are wanting when we talk systems transformation. And I will say that I am the first one to admit I am no IT expert. So when I talk with Commissioner Tomes or future Commissioner Eichten, and they talk about the fact that Delta's still running off of a DOS-based system too, but they've created interlays and things that you would never recognize, and there are opportunities for that kind of approach. Hey, we're open ears. But I think what's really tough when you look at the Danas and the Dans who came up here to testify is that it doesn't seem to be changing fast enough. And when we look to states who are actually updating their systems for the second or third time since we got Maxis in 1988 or 1989, that's tough to watch. I'm looking at Chair Knorr right in front of me. He actually ran some of these systems. He did that. And when we saw a presentation from Colorado where they're doing the SNAP applications, the person is doing their self-information. It's asking security questions right then and there. If there's assets like a home, it's asking what your mortgage was, what your lender was, what the address is, who's on the title. So they're actually doing some of the security thresholds right up in front before they actually work with a caseworker. They have a high percentage of cases that are automatically granted after they go through that verification software system that never even get to our county eligibility workers. It's really tough for our folks, and I saw this when they were looking at this demo, to look at that and say, great, we go back to our green screens. And the conversations is, again, about consultation. Yes, that is. I do not doubt that that is a priority of all the people sitting at this table, but there has to be an urgency about a vision of what's next. So I appreciate that was a little, I took a little bit of discretion to kind of go on a little bit, but I appreciate the opportunity to say that.
I next have a question from Representative Katuza-Watum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have got what I think are three very short questions. First, to Mr. Hilgard, you were just talking about the language that was passed in 2023 about how counties are consulted throughout this process. I think last year when we passed the SSIS funding, both Chair West and I and others on this committee were very specific about the amount of insight and expertise that the department would need to gather from the counties. Do you feel that the language as passed regarding SSIS is sufficient to kind of gather county inclusion and feedback throughout the next steps of the SSIS process particularly?
Mr. Hill.
Chair Torkelson, Chair Katuza-Watum, I believe that what we have seen in terms of what your intent was and how it's played out in the current consultation with counties has been great. You've heard testimony from Dan. You heard testimony from the agency and Commissioner Tomes. We believe that the over 100 people input during the process has been fantastic. However, that language still doesn't say what comes next. So that is something that we've mentioned about will we see those inputs played out in the RFP process of the vendor selection. After the vendor selected, what will the process for beta testing and testing include? Will we be there as well? I don't know that there's a specific format aside from a very clear intent that they work with us, and that's where I assume that that will be part of it, but whether or not that needs to be further written in a more holistic approach to any modernization structure that includes county-run systems is something that I would love to have a conversation with.
A follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I want to pivot to some of the SNAP information in the example that Ms. Walls had given us. Is the process that was displayed earlier, and I guess, Mr. Hilgart, if you're able to answer this, or maybe if Ms. Walls needs to speak to it, is that process that was displayed for us and kind of like the partial walkthrough, does that happen on a monthly basis, or does that happen at like time of life changes to the family or the applicant, or does it happen only at renewal?
I'll ask Ms. Walls to come up here to, if she's willing to
Thank
answer
you.
That
Ms. Walls
specific
would
logistics.
Step forward to answer that question. Welcome back, and go ahead with your answer.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. So the manual override process has to happen in certain situations. So the situation I was showing this morning with the general assistance, anytime somebody's approved for SNAP with general assistance, we have to use the manual override. If there's any changes to the general assistance during the SNAP certification period, again, using the manual override, and then at every six-month renewal, we would do that as well.
Okay. Thank you. Next, I have a question from Representative Scott.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Very quickly.
Yep, one final question. In HR1, there are new like error rate calculations that are going to come back to the counties based on a variety of things. So clerical and admin errors, like if two of those black boxes don't match, is that something that's going to be included in that error rate calculation to Mr. Hilgart, possibly?
Mr. Chair, Chair Katisa-Watoon, absolutely. And there are two basic tenets to that error rate. There are the agency error rate, which is a great example. We would argue that plenty of our agency errors, i.e. the counties that are administering these systems, are driven by the technology that you just saw. And Ms. Wall said, hey, here's a point where we could make an error here. The second component of this, and I think universally, hopefully we're agreed on this too, is that there are client-driven errors where through no intent on our end or even the system, a client fails to report. We catch it at that redetermination period. We fix it. We garnish wages or subtract future benefits, and we are still penalized from that. So that is an effort that we're working with at a federal level to say, hey, we shouldn't. That's about 40%, 45% of our error rate right now in Minnesota isn't basically systems, but more of that client error-driven site.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know who this question should be directed to. I hope that there's somebody in the room that can answer it. But if we push the restart button on all this stuff, what would the cost be?
Anybody got a big enough calculator for that?
I mean, I don't know if Mr. Tolmes has an idea.
Chair Torkelson, committee members, that you know, that's a big question in terms of, like, you know, hitting the reset button. I'll venture a guess, but please, you know, understand it's a guess. I think it would be north of $500 million, and I think it will set the state back immeasurably, in particular the people that are actually waiting for, you know, service from these program areas.
Thank you. A follow-up for Sam Scott.
Mr. Chair, as I'm sitting through these presentations, I'm sitting here just getting more and more angry. And more frustrated. For the love of all things obvious, why, when we had an $18 billion surplus, didn't we fix this problem? We've known it's existed for a very, very long time. But instead, we saw the $18 billion budget surplus. They took $295 million towards this problem. And they're trying to integrate stuff. I don't know how the IT works, but it seems to me that that would have been a perfect opportunity to fix this problem forever, or for at least the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And instead, we blew through that, raised taxes to $9 billion, and now we're faced with on deficits into the future. We have limited funds right now. And I it's super frustrating to me. And then we have $9 billion of fraud on top of it, and mostly from the agencies that we heard from today. So how much further ahead would we have been to give the $500 million when we had an $18 billion surplus to fix this problem? Maybe we wouldn't have the fraud that we have today. And I hope that, for the love of Pete, we can get this thing fixed. I can't imagine these county employees and what they have to how frustrating it would be to just to go to work every single day and look at those screens. It is, no one should have to do that in this modern world of technology. And then we hear that other states are getting it right. They're making progress in these areas. And I sit here just getting super frustrated. So now, I mean, we have like a ballparkish figure. I'm not going to hold you to that, Mr. Tolmes. I know it could be more or less, but let's fix this problem, Mr. Chair. That's all I have.
Next, I have a question from Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just a little bit about the relationship between these systems and property taxes, because I'm the tax person at the table, is just that when there's like a split between the entity that pays for services and the entity that pays for the administration of those services through their budgets, then I think that we can come up with some like perverse incentives. And it occurs to me that, you know, decisions that are made at the federal and state level because of our delegation of the administration of social services to counties just have really profound impacts on their budgets. And as, you know, Mr. Hilgart's saying, is that they don't get a lot of input into that necessarily. So, like saying, oh, we're going to have eligibility determinations every 6 months instead of every 12 months, you know, is a simple decision that maybe a body like ours gets to make or a body like Congress gets to make, and then providing no further funding for that level, you're just doubling the workload right there, going from 12 months to 6 months. In Minnesota, we severely restrict the tools that our local governments have to raise their own revenue. I think it was 85% of county revenue, own source revenue that they raise themselves, is from property taxes, because we have sort of collectively in Minnesota have a tradition of saying we don't want somebody's chance at a good life to depend on their proximity to tax base, whether that's income, property, or sales tax base. But increasingly, we are moving more and more in that direction. You know, we had a presentation from the counties in tax committee, county program aid, which supports every county in our state, every county in every one of our districts, has never gotten back to the level that it was in 2002, right? And so 24 years on, the price of everything has gone up, the price of personnel has gone up, the price of every pen that they buy has gone up, and we haven't even kept up on our state part of that fiscal-state relationship, state and local relationship over time. So there's, I'm really deeply worried about the impacts of, you know, some of these changes to the eligibility requirements without commensurate funding that are coming down from the feds, and what the impact is going to be on property tax levies moving forward. And I guess my question maybe was sort of Chair Scott's, but maybe it's because I've seen the Maxis thing like two or three times now. And there's sort of in all of these documents, there's not a lot of information about modernizing Maxis. The one specific thing I see related to Maxis is adding an integration layer. And when you talk about taking a program from 1989 and adding a layer on top of it, I'm like, that doesn't sound like addressing a root cause of the issue there. And so, I mean, maybe it is all integrated and it's all in this $500 million figure that you guys mentioned in response to Chair Scott, but is there a plan? Is there a way to move forward with like getting our workers out of that
MS-DOS-based system, and if so, what is the cost of that?
Who wants to tackle it? Commissioner, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I can start, and then happy to have Commissioner Tomes or others join in. So the integration layer, as has been mentioned, is that first step towards that incremental modernization. Many of the issues that we have run into in trying to work with some of the more modern technologies that exist now, we've run into this issue where our data exchange cannot occur because of the age of our system and the complexity of the data within our system. So this integration layer is, it's an odd name, recognizing that, but it is incredibly meaningful that we are moving forward in that, in this phase. And so as we saw on one of the county slides, they had, I think, what they call the airport model, where all of these systems can be connected. This will allow us to do that. And so the pilot phase that we are moving forward with, the integration layer that we've already begun to implement, will take us in that very first step. And as we learn more and begin to work with our county partners and tribes and other providers, we'll understand more about some of the funding. But at this point, we don't yet know what that full picture of full MACSIS modernization will cost.
Thank you. We're going to have to move along. Representative West, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do agree with my colleague, Chair Scott, that is so frustrated we had all that money and this is still a problem. But I also agree with Representative Elkins from the other side of the aisle that fraud is a significant issue that could be dealt with by better systems. So my hope is we can focus on fixing these problems before creating any more programs that can be exploited like we've seen. And the Promise Act hasn't even shot out all their money. We could claw back some funds and dedicate them to this. But my question is for Commissioner Tomes. I believe he can answer it. So whenever we're drafting legislation as legislators and touching IT in any way, even if we're changing something minute, we'll get a fiscal note that says $76,000, $226,000 to do something very, 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 very small. Will these modernization systems, as we go through, do anything to eliminate or minimize those numbers? Even though I believe they're fantasy numbers in the first place, I would hope that we can see something better in our fiscal notes with these updates.
Commissioner Tomes?
Chair Torkelson, committee members, Representative Heintzman. I think it's a fair question. I don't think modernization and changing of systems or improving systems changes the fact that every time a change is necessitated, that comes with a cost. It is not always an external cost. Sometimes the cost of doing something is baked into the staff budgets that already exist. But I think it's important for this body, every time a change is contemplated, whether it's big or small, to understand the full cost of actually implementing that.
Thank you. Representative Knorr for the last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the testifiers. I think this confirms what we already know. Our system is fragmented, outdated, and requires manual workaround to get things done. I've used the systems for almost 15 years, so I understand when we talk about the systems. In just this discussion, we've had about multiple systems. MAXIS, MMIS, MEC Square, METS, PIRISM, SSIS, MINSURE, MN Benefits. I also heard about the pharmacy module that was created. We had a little bit about the MIN choices, but also EVV, the analytics that we're talking about, the prepayment. What we don't understand is all these programs operate in different programs. You know, we've had about DOS, but it's basically a natural out-of-bus system that runs MAXIS system. We have got COBOL, which is no longer being supported. We've got Java++, which runs the MEC Square and also MEC Square Pro, which is also integrated within MAXIS system. It's complicated, members. But the problem that we have is we can no longer admire the problem. This is a time that we need to be bold. We have invested a lot of resources to do this. One of my key questions is, in order to do, I appreciate that you're already doing the IAPD, which is the Advanced Planning Document, which is necessary for us to draw down federal funding. I'll put it this way. If we're going to be making changes to the Medicaid system, it's about 90-10, 90% coming from the federal government. And some of these programs, it's 75-25, 50-50. I don't think we should wait any longer for us to fix this problem. You know, that 500 can become only 10%, paying for the rest of the 90% if we get it right. In order for us to do more integrated system, we have to understand from the perspective of no wrong door that people who are seeking services, they will be able to get that services. What is the plan in creating more APDs across the platforms for us to get it right? Commissioner Toms, is there any plan to do that across the platforms?
Chair Torkelson and Representative Noor, I probably would defer to the commissioners from Human Services and DCYF on that.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair and members. I can take the first attempt. So indeed, we are utilizing every ounce of federal funding to draw down on every single aspect we can. So in the presentation that I covered, I mentioned the SSIS funding, that's 50%. The PRISM modernization effort that we are undertaking, that also is around 50%. So all of that is drawing down federal funding. As we look to expand our SSIS capabilities and as we put in place a new platform, part of the conversation we're having with DHS is also with the adult systems, understanding what those advanced planning documents are needed for those federal partners to make sure that we are utilizing those fundings, understanding it as at a lower rate. So all of that is being developed and integrated in the planning as we move forward with the modernization efforts.
Thank you. Did you have any comments, Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair, Representative. I would just add that, yes, DHS also maximizes federal funding. I think it's now down not 90% anymore. It's been lowered to 75 at the high. But, yes, we do that. And then I'll just also add that our teams collaborate at the finance level and the systems level to make sure that we're moving together in a way that makes sense and that doesn't create additional burdens on the counties.
Thank you. Closing remarks, Representative Fazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, everybody, for this robust conversation. Thank you to the presenters that presented out. I'm going to hold off on back and forth with partisan comments. I think that we know this is an important issue. It's something we have to address. We know that both sides of the aisle believe that. I believe we're going to work together to get that done. Chair and I will have many more conversations around this. To those watching at home, don't be discouraged by the partisan way that we talk about these things. This is how we do it here. But we know that we have something that we have to work on, so we will be working on it to get it done. I'll just give an update for next week. We'll be having testimony from some of the local municipalities and jurisdictions and local businesses that have been impacted by the federal agents that have been in town, and then we'll have conversations around that and looking forward to how we can help folks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Fazier. Thank you, members. Just a couple of quick remarks. I think we've identified the importance of this program. As far as HR1 goes, there is actually funding in HR1 to help with these transitions. Make sure, and we've talked about that, Representative Noor talked about it, those funds are available and we need to utilize them to get this work done. I would also remind members that the other work that we do, that anytime we make changes in these programs, as we make them more complicated or more difficult for our agencies to actually implement, we're adding to the problem. I think as we write legislation, it's imperative that we consult the agencies, that we consult NINET, and we understand exactly what the results are of our efforts. You know, we want to reach the people, but there's a lot of steps between us and the people, and many of them involve technology. If we force things onto the agencies that they don't have the tools to deal with, we are creating a bigger problem. Please, members, as you move forward in your careers, mine's coming to an end, but many of you will be here, keep this in mind. You know, I often say if you had to sit down and do my taxes with a calculator and a piece of paper, you wouldn't be able to do them, frankly, because there are so many interactions in those in that tax system that require the computer to recalculate a whole series of numbers to get the job done. And we've used technology, we've leaned on technology to make life so complicated that we can't live without it. It's much the same in our state systems. If you forced our state agencies to sit down with a tablet and a calculator and an address book to manage these systems, they couldn't do it. because we made them so darn complicated, it's impossible. Well, the least we can do is supply the tools to these people so they can do their jobs well. Members, we are adjourned.